You need to be able to separate fact from fiction when it comes to reading the news. We've got a tutorial on Fake News 101 just ahead. Good Monday morning and live from Studio 5. This is First Coast Connect on 89.9. Thanks for listening. I'm Melissa Ross. Hope you had a good weekend. And we're always live at 9. You can also listen to our podcast on iTunes, Stitcher, and through our app. Just ahead, local author Danny Murphy joins the show with some tips on how you can spot fake news and avoid being fooled by it. What do you consider to be fake news? Give us a call right now, 549-2937. Then later, it's an alarming trend, medical doctors committing suicide, including here in our area. Plus, Culpepper as the Jaguars finally make it back into the playoffs. A thrilling game over the weekend. He'll have a look back at that and their hopes in the playoff season. All of that and more ahead this morning. But first this hour, Pope Francis is criticizing journalists who sensationalize the news, saying it's a serious sin that hurts all involved. Francis says he plans to dedicate his upcoming annual communications message to the scourge of fake news. He told Catholic media on Saturday that journalists perform a mission that is fundamental to democratic societies. And he reminded them to provide precise, complete, and correct information to the public. Good advice, Pope Francis. Now, the 2016 election, of course, saw the disturbing rise of fake news, in particular, the use of misleading or even outright false propaganda that looks like journalism but isn't, often planted by Russian interference on our social media giants, like Facebook, for example. It's the consensus of our intelligence community that those social media fake news items did, in fact, influence our election. And in these polarized times, it can be tough to verify that the information you're looking at, especially online, is accurate and is the product of real journalism, evidence-based, more than one source, all the old-fashioned reporting rigor that produces accurate information to the best of the journalist's ability. Now, local author Danny Murphy has been looking into this, and he's written the book on it. It's called Fake News 101. How to recognize fake news and avoid being fooled by it. Danny Murphy joins us now in studio. Good morning.
Good morning. Thanks for having me.
So good to have you on the show. And here's our question to callers. Are you concerned about fake news? How do you define that term? What do you consider to be fake news? Give us a call, 549-2937. That's 549-2937. Or go online, send your emails to firstcoastconnect@wjct.org. Tweets to @MelissaInJax. And let us know your thoughts on our Facebook page, too. All right, fake news 101. For people that are confused about various news sources they see, particularly online, you decided to write a book to separate the real from the fake.
Absolutely, yeah. There's so much of it going around and so many varieties of it that people, you know, they think of fake news as one thing, but it's a lot of things. It's satire, it's disinformation, it's misinformation, it's propaganda, it's just, and so much more.
Exactly. Propaganda, like, for example, back in the 1940s when Orson Welles did his fake War of the Worlds broadcast and everyone thought it was real.
Yeah.
That was sort of like the first real incident of this that really provoked a reaction from the public.
And in an odd way, it was an example beyond itself because it was hyped to a much bigger degree than it actually happened. It developed its own mythology.
Yeah, it did. And so from that, we've seen all manner of publications crop up in recent years that weren't necessarily driven by a political bent, but they weren't real either. The one that comes to mind most frequently for me is The Onion.
The Onion.
That's satire. It's not real. It's a joke. Sometimes people can't tell, though.
That's a problem. The illiteracy pertaining to the news and the understanding of satire, they label themselves that way, but people still pass the things along, the articles, as if they're real, and they get circulated and they go viral. And the writing is really good, too. So,
right. Now, let's ask some questions about how you, Danny Murphy, in your book, decide to verify something. What does it need to do to pass the Danny Murphy test so that you know this is not fake, this is a real story, it has real information. I can take this as a credible piece of journalism.
Well, there are a lot of telltale signs that if you just scratch beneath the surface, and by that I mean go to the bottom, look at the about page. Many times for satire sites, it'll say satire. It might say something like a slogan, satire for the wise, news for the dumb. That's news mutiny. Obviously, that is satire. But there are telltale signs. In addition, the articles, if the articles don't have authors at the top, if they don't have the name of a person who actually did it, that's a question mark.
A byline. Someone's
name. Yeah, a byline,
name.
Exactly.
Who wrote it?
Yeah,
that's number one. That's a good one. You also say to spot fake news, you should go to certain websites that even in today's polarized environment, most of us can still agree are fair arbiters, neutral arbiters, like factcheck.org.
Absolutely, yeah. Factcheck.org, Snopes, some of the time, they've gotten a little bit political, but that's nonsense. I go to that website sometimes.
You do. And, you know, but what's interesting, too, as you note in your book, websites on the left and the right that partisans see as credible have both. There are some examples we could point to, and you do in your book. They've put stories online that were later determined to be completely fake.
And one of the reasons, of course, is the news cycle. Everybody wants to get everything out the instant they get to it, and they don't vet it, they don't check it out, they don't make the phone calls, they don't do the digging, and they put something out before it's ready to go, before it's been verified.
And different news organizations have different standards, but by and large, the major players in the media business at the national level, particularly newspapers like the New York Times and the Washington Post, they come to mind, they've been publishing a lot of investigative journalism recently. And for people that don't understand their process, can't publish something unless they've confirmed it from many different sources and verified it from a number of independent places. But they won't publish something, or they're not supposed to publish something, based on one source or one leak or one whistleblower. There's a pretty rigorous process that goes into the publishing of information that's sensitive or highly charged.
Yes, and there should be a process. Unfortunately, it gets bypassed and people go ahead with things that aren't ready, as I've said before. Brian Ross, he got in trouble for that earlier this month, and he's been suspended for it.
Right. And so when a guy like Brian Ross of ABC gets suspended for jumping the gun, reporting something that's false, or a reporter from any organization, immediately now people that don't like that news outlet say, it's just fake.
It's all junk, yeah. That's the conclusion people jump to when they see one thing, and it's not fair.
And so what would you say to those now who, whenever they see a story they don't like, they say, oh, that's just fake news?
Like President Trump?
President Trump is one.
You know, the thing there is that he can say it very often and be correct some of the time, so it in his mind or in his supporters' minds is justified.
What would you say to those listening right now who like President Trump and they see the growing volume of reports about the investigation into Russian interference as a witch hunt, fake news, not credible? They don't believe what they're reading. They don't take it as credible information.
Well, it's important to read below the headlines, dig into the story a little bit, look at the links and see what's there, and judge for yourself, as a journalist would do. I mean, most people don't have time. That's the problem. We look at headlines, we pass it on, we share.
And in your book, too, as I read through it, I noticed you were also quick to point out that websites that have a more progressive bent have also fallen victim to republishing something that was not true, that was a hoax, an internet hoax, or just wasn't accurate.
That is a big problem, and passing along. I mean, they do the same thing that consumers do. They pass things along, and then when it goes wrong, it's not their fault. It's the fault of whoever they got it from. And so they, as well as verifying their own stories, they should verify the stories they're sharing.
Let's go to your calls as we talk with author Danny Murphy. His book is Fake News 101. The Pope over the weekend even spoke out about fake news. What do you think about all this? Let's go to your calls. Tim is in St. Augustine. Hi, Tim. Good morning.
Hi. Thanks for taking my call. I was wondering about when Rex Tillerson says we will talk to North Korea and President Trump says we will not talk to North Korea unless they disarm, what do you call that, fake news or flake news? Or, you know, doesn't he perpetuate the fake news a lot?
That one seemed to be real news. I mean, a conflict like that between the Secretary of State and the President, that is real news.
Yeah. I mean, yeah, that actually occurred. Yeah. That's verifiable.
Yep.
Can you understand, though, why we've reached a point in this society, Danny, where people are so distrustful of information? That's not good.
It's not good. It's not good, and it's one of the things that President Trump exploited when he was campaigning. When I saw him campaign in Jacksonville at the rally, the first thing he did was say something along the lines of the press are disgrace, the media, they're a disgrace. I think that was his number one line. So it was a big part of his shtick, and it really worked because a lot of Americans do distrust the media at this point.
Certainly. In fact, it can be frustrating to work in a media organization where we really are trying to inform the public as credibly as possible.
Yeah.
But trust in media is not high. Trust in all institutions is not high, whether it's the press, Congress, pretty much every major institution except maybe the military has lost credibility with the public.
Yes.
Not good.
It's not good at all.
And what do you think we need to do about it?
Well, I think we need to find media that we trust, media that are trustworthy. And one thing that we have to do is not believe because of our own political bent, but to look beyond that and look at the facts that are being presented and verify the facts that are being presented. And again, this is something most people don't have time to do, but just a little bit of scratching beneath the surface will show people so much.
549-2937. Mike is on the west side. Hey, Mike, good morning.
Good morning. Thanks for taking my call. What I was originally going to say, I think no longer applies. You guys have opened up quite the can of worms since I've been on hold. How do you get people to believe that there is a media bend and there is an agenda set, I believe, by the media, but it's a local, very local thing. And the reason why I say that is because no matter where you go, excuse me, in this country and you watch the local media in the mornings, it's the same black people committing the same murders and the same accidents it's the same bad news everywhere you go in a local, outside of NPR, WJCT and WCF and all these other NPR, that's different. You guys have local, it's different. I'm not talking about you. I don't see mainstream, quite frankly. I don't think when the conservatives talk mainstream, they don't talk about you, NPR, because they cite you more than they talk about you in a negative light. But I don't think people really want to believe. I think people, I mean, we can't even agree on simple definitions anymore. What is freedom? Privacy, the things that we used to hold dear and we all agreed on. For example, believe what you want to, it's a free country, but don't try and force that crap on me, that kind of stuff. I mean, it seems like it's a huge can of worms, and it's about getting society changed. It's not so much government and regulations. Besides, the government shouldn't bother people. It should be the reach of the government into your life. That's the point that you need to stand for, but not the size, the physical. You can have one person in the government, but if I feel like the government's in my life, that the size of that government's too big. I mean, it doesn't have anything to do with the physical side, mm-hmm.
Okay.
So there's a lot we need to start off, and from square one, we need to agree at least at square one before we get to.
Okay, thank you, Mike.
All the others. Thank you.
Thanks for that call. And Danny Murphy, how about this? Last year, researchers at Stanford decided to see how well students around the country can evaluate online sources of information, right? So they put middle, high school, and college students into this study, collected thousands of responses. And in exercise after exercise, they were shocked at how many students failed to effectively evaluate whether an information source was credible or not. More than 80% of middle schoolers believe that sponsored content was a real news story. It looks like a news story, but it's not. It's just a piece of paid propaganda. And plenty of adults can't tell the difference either.
Yeah, and a lot of times with the sponsored content, there's a tiny grayish print that says sponsored above it, and yeah, you barely notice it. But one of the things that I think our caller was getting to is, and something that I believe, is that a lot of people prefer fake news. They prefer news that confirms what they believe, that caters to their belief system, and therefore it's more palatable to them.
Right, and people increasingly are seeking out partisan outlets that confirm their worldview, whereas what you're saying is people should read from a variety of different outlets across the political spectrum before you make a final opinion or judgment about something.
Absolutely. When it comes to something important, it's good to see both sides of the issue, and not necessarily to agree with the other side, but to understand that they have a side, they have an opinion, and there are reasons why they believe what they believe.
Daryl in St. Augustine. Hi, Daryl. Go ahead.
Hi. Yeah, it's exceedingly apparent that the people are not capable and the information is not there for them to make a rational decision. They don't have the time. They don't have the resources. We used to have a system called UPI, an Associated Press, that were facts produced by journalists. There needs to be on social media some form of, let's say, if it's a fact and it's an actual news story, that it's in blue or in black or in red, and nobody else is allowed to use that information. I had a horrible Facebook war with somebody who posted a fake news story about the church shooting in Texas because it fits his political slant. And he was absolutely brutal about this. And I was brutal about it. And it was designed to make us fight, and that's exactly what it did. There has to be some sort of system to design to gauge things.
A system. A referee, huh? Okay, thanks for that, Daryl. Is that a good idea, Danny?
Well, of course, Facebook is trying to implement some measures to verify and to check out stories and whatnot. But there are a lot of stories. There are way too many stories out there to check them all out. So that's a challenge. There's not going to be an easy answer. And even with Facebook trying to make the right moves and do the right things, it's going to take some time to implement a system that's effective.
It would be, yeah. That'd be a difficult job.
It would be.
Not to say it shouldn't be attempted. Let's go to Michelle on the South Side. Hi, Michelle. Good morning.
Oh, hi. Thanks for taking my call. I just wanted to comment real quick. It's really upsetting about the fake news in the media, and I do agree with the last caller that there needs to be some sort of verification system, but it seems to me that the journalistic community needs to do a complete overhaul and, you know, get back to the roots of journalism, because it seems now there's no truth. How do you know the truth? It seems to be the truth is whatever you think it is, and maybe somewhere along the way the young folks that are relying on social media can be taught that, hey, here's social media, and these are opinions and comments, but here's the real news, you know, your major networks, and those folks need to get on the journalistic page like they used to be way back when you could watch the news and just hear what's going on without any political comments or any political bias, and then let the listeners decide for themselves. That was my comment.
Yeah, thank you for that, Michelle. Great comments from a lot of listeners. And on our Facebook page, Chris writes, the easiest way to spot fake news is to do your own research. The information is available at everyone's fingertips. People are just so lazy or too lazy to look. And if it's someone they hate, they don't care whether or not it's fake. So during the election, we saw this play out on our Facebook feeds every day. There were fake stories running on our social media sites against both of the presidential candidates that were completely false.
And if they fit with a person's belief system, those stories are going to be shared and distributed and possibly go viral. So it has to be done at the individual level. There's no enforceable way to come up with an agency that's going to arbitrate what's true and what's not true. That I don't think that's realistic. So people have to evaluate and find the sources of news that they think are reliable. I read the Wall Street Journal every day. I think their news is very good. Their opinion page is pretty opinionated. I understand that. I read the Times Union because I want to stay local, and I think their news is very good. Some people don't, but I think they're pretty even-handed. So mm-hmm. you have to find the sources that you can trust, and once in a while take a look at the other side.
Good advice. Danny Murphy, thanks so much for joining us.
Thanks for having me.
He's First Coast author Danny Murphy. The book is Fake News 101, How to Recognize Fake News and Avoid Being Fooled by It.
May I mention that it's free on Kindle this week, and it's discounted to $5.95 in paperback through Christmas.
Good Christmas present for people.
Absolutely.
Yeah, pick one up for the uncle you disagree with.
There you go.
There you go. And much more still ahead later. The Jaguars are headed to the playoffs. Cole Pepper with more about this weekend's thrilling victory. But up next, spotlighting the most unique new spot in town. We'll tell you about Canine Social right after this.
Hendricks Avenue Baptist Church is a place to experience Christ's presence and God's Spirit in a vibrant faith community. HAB celebrates diversity, seeks to bridge differences, and journeys together in an honest and authentic search for truth. HABchurch.com. Find a different way of being Baptist.
Calling all educators, WJCT and Community First Credit Union are proud to present the 5th Annual Teach Conference, an event created by teachers to engage, empower, and inspire. Saturday, February 10th at the Hyatt Regency Hotel. Tickets are $30. Tickets purchased for the 2016 and 2017 events will be honored. Share ideas with colleagues, learn new ways to engage students, and empower yourself to inspire others. Bring a friend and get your tickets today at wjct.org/teach.
The WJCT app. Now you can watch PBS programs on demand, including PBS Kids, right from your phone or tablet. Listen to live streaming audio, WJCT News, and NPR programs.
This is First Coast Connect.
Easily access the WJCT TV and radio schedule. Connect to WJCT social media and much more. The WJCT app, available now in the Apple App Store and Google Play.
Take a drive with us into the Blues Horizon every Monday and Wednesday night at 11. The best in classic and modern blues as part of WJCT's After Hours. Every Monday and Wednesday night at 11 on 89.9 WJCT. Your community, your world, your music.
Welcome back. Well, it's billed as the city's first ever dog park, craft beer emporium, and coffee bar all in one. Our digital editor, Bill Bortsfield, was curious about this, so he spoke with the owner of this new place, Dustin Fries, and investor Daniel Moffat about their plan to open a brand new place in town, Canine Social.
Imagine being able to go out for a craft beer or a hot cup of Java with your dog. That scenario will soon be a reality thanks to a new startup called Canine Social that's under development at 580 College Street in the Brooklyn Riverside area. Joining me to talk about the venture are two of the guys behind the project, Dustin Fries and Daniel Moffat. Welcome, guys.
Hey, thanks, Bill.
Daniel, this sounds like a pretty unique concept. Go ahead and unpack it for us.
Sure, Bill. Thanks for having us to talk about Canine Social. What it is we are creating Jacksonville's first private indoor-outdoor dog park, craft beer and coffee bar, as well as a boutique doggy daycare facility over in the Riverside, Brooklyn area. And it's a unique idea and concept in the fact that It's a place where you can bring your dog, enjoy a beer with your friends, enjoy coffee with friends, and let your dog run off leash in our indoor park or outdoor park space. Most of the time, Dustin and I have been going to breweries with our dogs, and they have to stay on the leash, or you go to a restaurant and you got to stay outside, and it's just, you know, it's difficult. It's frustrating. Your dog doesn't really enjoy it. It kind of just lays there at your feet. So we figured, why not create a place where people can come, they can bring their dogs, enjoy the dog park atmosphere, while also having a beer, having coffee, staying throughout the day. We'll have TVs to watch football games, bunch of different events going on for our park members, and just other different things for people to be able to do while they're there that you can't really get it at these other places, like a normal dog park or a normal brewery that you go to.
Yeah, you know, when I saw your renderings, guys, it really piqued my interest. And one of the things that I got the biggest kick out of was the tap for the dogs. Dustin, are we talking water taps, or do we have any, quote, doggy drinks that will be available?
I mean, our goal is to have some sort of, you know, dog beers that we won't be manufacturing, but, you know, we'll sell for, you know, they don't have alcohol in them. But those taps will actually be water.
Okay, and what about doggy treats in general? And we're going to talk about the human treats as well. But give me an idea. What makes this different for the dog?
Well, it's just the overall experience. I mean, for them to be able to hang out with their friends, you know, inside as well as outside. And I mean, the dog's safety is kind of our main focus.
And one of the things I do want to ask about that, of course, there's such a wide variety of dogs. For example, I have a Chihuahua, but of course, Golden Retrievers, German Shepherds, and on and on and on. As we all know, some dogs are more docile, some are more aggressive. What's the plan? Will all varieties be welcome? And if so, what's the plan to, you know, make sure that there's no doggy brawls?
Yeah, sure. So just like your typical private dog park, which we are a private membership-based dog park, everyone is there. They're spayed or neutered. They have current vaccinations for rabies and distemper and those type of things. And we also do temperament tests on the dogs. So we'll make sure that the dogs are, you know, able to be socialized with other dogs. We're if some other dog's coming in and he's being aggressive constantly, we can say, hey, you know, take your dog, put him on a leash, you know, just let him chill out for a little bit, just to make sure everybody feels safe. On top of that, the people watching their dogs will have canine social team members that are there in the park area, making sure that the dogs are playing friendly. There's no, you know, two dogs ganging up on one and that kind of stuff that sometimes happens. So whereas you go to a public park, you don't really have control over who's there. We sort of have a little bit more control to make sure everybody's safe. And make it a, you know, a clean, friendly atmosphere for the dogs and the people that are hanging out as well.
Now let's go back to their owners. Of course, again, the craft beer and coffee aspect really helps set this project apart. For those that are aficionados of both beverages, give us an idea of what they can expect.
So we want to stay, you know, as local as possible, and just have coffee and craft beer, you know, that's here and brewed in Northeast Florida. So whether it's, you know, local coffees that will rotate, seasonal stuff from the different coffee manufacturers. We'll also have local beers from the local breweries and then some regional and some national. We'll have around 25 taps that will be interchangeable throughout the process.
And any type of menu for this project as far as food goes?
At this time, no, we won't have food. The obvious reasons are having the dogs and getting approval and all that kind of stuff.
Well, and the name itself, Canine Social, sort of says it all. So let's talk a little bit about the social aspects. Mm-hmm. Any special events, types of things that you foresee that, again, are going to draw the
sure.
customers to your
yeah,
place?
We have a ton of different ideas and events. It would take, you know, 20 minutes to go through all of them. But a couple of the things that we're really excited about doing are breed meetup groups. And we've talked to some of the German Shepherd clubs and the Doodle clubs and the Golden Retriever and the Lab clubs. And they go, you know, once a month, they go to one of the dog parks or they'll go to somewhere and they'll bring 10, 20 dogs. And, you know, it's it's okay for them, but they don't have a nice air-conditioned, climate-controlled space like we have, protected from the elements. Plus, we have beer and coffee. So they could do it on a Saturday morning and enjoy coffee. They could do it on a Thursday night and enjoy a beer. We have that private space where you could have 20 or 30 dogs easily for them to sort of hang out and socialize their dogs and socialize with other people that are, you know, excited about that specific breed.
And give us what you envision to be your hours. You know, are we talking 7 days a week, you know, 9 to 10? Give us the lineup.
It's kind of two businesses that we'll have. We have a doggy daycare side, which we haven't spoken much about, but that'll be an early morning until evening type thing. So that service is sort of for people that are on their way to work. They drop their dog off for doggy daycare. We'll have a valet service. We're providing a little bit more of a concierge level services for our customers, where our valet service will come out. We'll bring your dog. If you've made a reservation and you need a coffee in the morning, we'll bring the coffee out to you. Grab your dog. You're on your way. We just saved you some time in the morning. You don't have to stop to get your coffee. We're trying to make the experience a little bit more involved and easier for the customers, rather than having to park and get out and grab your dog and on the leash and it's raining or it's hot outside. We just want to make a little bit easier experience for our customers.
And give us an idea of the size of the scope, you know, in terms of the number of employees, the number of dogs that you'll be able to accommodate, and the number of overall patrons you envision being able to accommodate.
Yeah, we're still working through some of those things through our approval process. We plan to hire about 16 part-time employees. We'll have, in addition to Dustin and myself being there, we'll have typically 2 to 3 canine social team members there for the doggy daycare. And then at the bar, we'll have a bartender or two, depending upon, you know, the days of the week. Obviously, the weekend's going to be busier. We'll have some bartenders and some people inside the park sort of watching. So maybe 3 or 4 people on a Saturday or Sunday there, in addition to the two of us. Number of people and dogs, we've got about 12,000 square feet plus another 7,000 square feet outside. It's a big space. We just don't have specifics on how many we can fit in each of those spaces right now.
Sure. And of course, you're still going through the permitting and construction and all those things. What's your anticipated time frame to open?
Sure. We're expecting to go through the approval process with DIA and DDRB in their January meeting. After that, if we can start construction sometime in early February, we anticipate an 8 to 12 week construction period. So our anticipated opening would hopefully be late spring. I would say sometime late April or early May is.
And we'll look for that. For more about Canine Social, visit our website at wjctnews.org, and we'll be right back.
A couple things. So,
on Fresh Air, you can hear interviews that make you see the world in a new way.
Every drink of water you take, every pot of coffee you make is dinosaur pee, because it's all been through the kidneys of a Tyrannosaurus rex or an Apatosaurus many, many times, because all the water we have is all the water we have ever had.
You just never know what you'll learn next on Fresh Air. Join us weekdays at noon on 89.9 WJCT. Your community, your world.
There's always something new happening in your community and your world. Whether it's Morning Edition tackling topical concerns in a smart, thoughtful way, or First Coast Connect introducing you to local artists and innovators, you can always count on WJCT to share a world of exploration with you. Make a year-end donation to ensure the programs you cherish and rely on continue to thrive throughout the year to come. Give online now at WJCT.org.
Welcome back. Well, earlier this year, a sweeping new study appeared in the Journal of Academic Medicine, and it found that suicide, yes, suicide, is one of the leading causes of death among America's doctors. Recently here in our area, several physicians have taken their own lives as well. Brian Campbell is CEO of the Duval County Medical Society, and he has some thoughts about the high rate of doctor suicides both in Jacksonville and around the country. Hey, Brian.
Good morning.
This is a public health crisis, but it's one that's kind of been flying under the radar, right?
Well, it is, and it's for some good and perhaps some not so good reasons. You know, physicians obviously are there to take care of us, and you know they're one of the few industries that everyone sees their doctor, everyone takes care of their doctor, and it's you know the doctor has to be the pinnacle of health, and so when the doctor isn't, sometimes that's a hidden epidemic, and there are some systemic reasons why that actually is the case.
And there are some really disturbing reasons when you look at the reasons why. Doctors do this. And by the way, your doctor can seem like the happiest guy or woman in the world, and then the next day they turn up dead. They are masters of disguise, according to the studies I've seen on this, because they feel the need to put on a happy face for their patients.
Indeed. And you know, that's one of the most important parts of being a physician is working with the patients. So they can't let that creep into the room. But you know, doctors are humans and people just like the rest of us, and they're susceptible to the same issues. And when you look at there are a lot of indicators showing that burnout in the physician community is 60%. And I'm sorry, go ahead.
Burnout is a big problem. Academic distress, even when they're still medical students, being held accountable for an error that could result in a patient being injured or killed. This whole assembly line medicine that doctors are dealing with, the pressure to see a lot of patients really quickly. There's so many things, aren't there?
There are. And I think that last one, and every one that you said there is true, and every industry has its own stressors. But I think that when you want to take a look at some of the subtle reasons why physicians are dealing with this level of stress, that the burden to see patients quickly is one that I think we all recognize. You know, it used to be, you know, you had a 15, 20-minute session with your physician. You'd sit down. They'd talk to you. They'd ask you questions. Now, because of regulations and having to put all that information in the electronic medical record, half the time they're sitting with you, they might have to be engaged in putting things in the computer. And that's, you know, it's their obligation that stuff has to be complete in that system before they move on to the next one. So those are not – every industry has its stressors, but on those particular issues, they can't – that time can only come from the time that they spend with you. The physician wants to spend the time with you, but they can't because they have to put it in there. And there are some barriers to care. So if you or I want help, I mean, you know, say what you will about the Affordable Care Act or Obamacare, access to mental health services is now something that everyone can get. And you can get that essentially for free as long as you have insurance coverage. But with a physician, when a physician seeks mental health services, that actually gets reported in their medical record. And that can actually impact their ability to maintain their medical license and actually can be used as a reason to keep them from being able to do their job in the future when they renew. And when surveyed, more than 70% of physicians said that they consider that a factor in whether or not they would seek help simply because they're concerned about getting help impacting their ability to practice medicine.
They're driven to need mental health care because of the demands of the job, but then they can't get it because it could result in them losing their jobs.
Yeah, it's an unfortunate catch-22, which is unfortunately why you see that stress building, the burnout. Burnout is actually the number one reason why physicians are leaving practice. Like I said before, 60% of physicians reporting burnout that has made them consider leaving the practice. And we already have a physician shortage. That just only makes it worse.
Dr. Sunil Joshi is president of the Duval County Medical Society Foundation. He's on the line now calling into the show. And Dr. Joshi, it's my understanding several local doctors have committed suicide recently. What's your society looking at to try to provide support to local physicians when it comes to this phenomenon?
Yeah, and you're right, Melissa. Unfortunately, that's true. We've had a few in the last 2 months, and we've had multiple in the last few years commit suicide here in Northeast Florida. And so as a Medical Society Foundation, we recognize this as a major concern, not just for our members, not just for physicians, but for the community at large. And And we have a program called the Physician Wellness Program, where we are offering free and confidential services to physicians who are not just feeling burned out, but are even worse off than that, than maybe contemplating suicide, or having feelings of depression, to come and talk to a counselor who's going to keep it completely confidential. And the Medical Society Foundation will pay for their first 6 visits. So it's a way for the physicians to get the care that they need and talk to an expert who deals with this on a regular basis to hopefully minimize that burden on the physician in particular.
This is something I'm sure a lot of physicians need. Of course, if they can even find the time to get in there for a counseling session, right, Dr. Joshi? Because the demands are so intense of the hours doctors keep and all of that.
Oh, absolutely. So it's hard enough for a physician, as Brian was saying earlier, it's hard enough for a physician to admit that he or she has an issue dealing with mental wellness. But then the second issue is, how do they get out of their physical practice location to go and discuss their care with somebody else? There are multiple factors there. And keep in mind, a lot of these physicians who are having burnout issues are relatively young. They have their own children that they're taking care of. They have a spouse that they're interacting with on a daily basis. And they have their own parents, a lot of times, that they have to manage their health conditions, just like anybody else who's in our same generation has to deal with. But on top of that, they're dealing with the health of the community at large as well. And so there's so many stressors involved with this, outside of the electronic medical record, outside of the finances of the practice, outside of having to see patients every 10 or 15 minutes, that add to that burden.
Well, this is something I think a lot of people, the next time they go to their doctor's office that are listening to this right now, Brian, they might be looking at their doc and saying, gosh, are you really okay? I didn't realize how much stress you were under.
Well, I think that and Dr. Joshi can certainly speak to this as well. You know, the bedside manner, the ability to have a relationship with your physician and the patient is so key to proper care. And I think that that's something that probably not everyone has the wherewithal to think about. How are you doing, doc?
Exactly. You're not thinking about how the doctor's doing. You want him to or her to fix your problems. But Dr. Joshi, I think all of us have had the experience of feeling rushed at a doctor's office or any caregiver's office. And this is an eye-opener to realize that the doctors are just as upset about it as the patients, correct?
No, absolutely. And, you know, I can't tell you how far it goes when a patient asks me how I'm doing, you know, and they actually stop and say, hey, how is your family? How are you doing? It really does mean a lot. You know, as we're sitting in there for a 15-minute conversation about the patient's health, and obviously that's why they're there and that's why they're paying a copay, et cetera. But the patients, the very few, in fact, who stop and ask me how I'm doing and show a genuine interest in my life makes a difference. It really does. And so if there are listeners out there who feel passionately towards their doctors, please take some time to just ask them how they're doing every now and then. It makes an impact in their lives in ways that you just don't understand.
And if doctors are listening and you're struggling with depression, anxiety, stress, the Duval County Medical Society is offering free and confidential sessions. You need to call them at 631-1446, and this will not appear on your record in any way, so you don't have to worry about your license.
Yeah, and I just want to take the time to just stress that. The bottom line is that we have worked, the Board of Medicine has approved this program. These are not going to be reported to your medical record. It is confidential. We'll get you the help that you need.
It's the Duval County Medical Society. They're trying to address this issue of physician suicides. It's a big problem, which people might not have realized. Certainly an eye-opening segment from both of you guys. Thank you both so much for joining us today with more about this.
Thank you very much.
Thank you, Melissa.
He is Brian Campbell, CEO of the Duval County Medical Society, Dr. Sunil Joshi, MD, president of the Duval County Medical Society Foundation. And in a moment, why the Jaguars are going to the playoffs. That's next.
Hendricks Avenue Baptist Church is a place to experience Christ's presence and God's Spirit in a vibrant faith community. HAB celebrates diversity, seeks to bridge differences, and journeys together in an honest and authentic search for truth. HABchurch.com. Find a different way of being Baptist.
The media industry is changing fast with massive mergers and a regulatory rollback by the FCC. They raise concerns over conflicts of interest and the integrity of the internet. Those in favor of the changes point to a better user experience. But wait, we're the users. What does all this mean for us? Next time on 1A. Weekdays at 10 after First Coast Connect on 89.9 WJCT. Your community, your world.
On the next Fresh Air, seafood. Some fish you might not be familiar with that are not threatened and are good to eat. We talk with former chef Barton Seaver, who directs the Sustainable Seafood and Health Initiative at Harvard. Also, Jennifer Egan talks about her novel Manhattan Beach, which is on our book critic Maureen Corrigan's top 10 list. Join us weekdays at noon on 89.9 WJCT. Your community, your world.
Bock Tower Gardens in Lake Wales opened in 1929 with a dedication by President Calvin Coolidge. I'm Ben Brotmarkle, and coming up on Florida Frontiers, the weekly radio magazine of the Florida Historical Society, we'll go to the top of Bock Tower where the carillon is played. We'll discuss WPA documentation of the turpentine industry and development of Florida's railroad system. That's Florida Frontiers, Monday evening at 6:30 on 89.9 WJCT.
Convinced you've heard it all before? Well, at Indie Endeavor, we challenge that notion. Tune into WJCT's After Hours for the best songs you've never listened to. Tuesdays at 11 p.m.
Welcome back. Well, finally this hour, for the first time in a decade, the Jaguars are going to the playoffs.
I'm a pepper, he's a pepper, she's a pepper, we're a pepper. Wouldn't you like to be a pepper too?
The final score over the Texans, 45-7. Cole Pepper breaks down the game for us, and what comes next? Hey, good morning.
It was just an absolute party yesterday at Everbank Field.
Yeah.
And in some ways it was cathartic, in some ways it was a celebration, in some ways it was sort of a chance for the Jaguars fans and the players to sort of say, look at NFL, take us for, you know, seriously.
How do you like
now.
Me now?
Right, and it's interesting, talking to some of the players after the game, there are a lot of them who are certainly falling right in line with what Doug Marrone is preaching, which is, hey, we've got to win the next game. The reason you get to celebrate and feel good for 24 hours after the win is because you take care of business during the week and you go out there and get things done. But for the fans, I mean, it was so out of hand. At one point in the third quarter, they're doing the wave with the offense on the field, which is usually a no-no, but they were just throttling the Texans, who had no chance at all. And everybody's just celebrating. Then at one point in the fourth quarter, fans started chanting playoffs, playoffs.
Right.
And asking some of the players about that, they all would get these big grins on their faces, thinking, you know, okay, we've accomplished something here that hasn't happened in a decade. You go back to 2007. But even more than that, if I can put a little historical perspective on it, Melissa, I think that what is happening this year, the only other year in Jaguars history that has anywhere near the same kind of feel is 1996. That was the Jaguars' second season when they started 4-7, then unexpectedly got red hot, won their way into the playoffs, and then won games in Buffalo and Denver to get to the AFC Championship game. This was not as unexpected once the season got going. It was certainly unexpected at the beginning of the year when the Jaguars looked like they had all kinds of issues. But if you think about how far they've come, the offensive line was a mess when the season began. They've played tremendously, given up only two sacks in the last 3 weeks. Blake Bortles was basically, they opened up the quarterback competition in the preseason because Bortles had struggled. Mm-hmm. He's now the highest rated quarterback in the National Football League in the month of December. They've had injuries on the offensive line, injuries to Leonard Fournette. Their wide receivers right now, the guys who were playing at the end of the game yesterday were an undrafted rookie from Kentucky Wesleyan, Keelan Cole, a fourth-round pick rookie, D.D. Westbrook, who missed the first half of the season with an injury, and a guy named Jadon Mickens, who was sleeping in his car in September as he was on the practice squad. It's not exactly, you know, the greatest collection of receivers, but it's a great story, and how the Jaguars have done, really very impressive. So they get the win. The defense does it yet again. They're still the top-ranked defense in the National Football League, and I think they can carry them deep into the playoffs. They're 10-4, and because they've made the playoffs for the first time since 2007, it's interesting to talk to Mercedes Lewis. The Jaguars tight end is the only player remaining on the team from that 2007 Jaguar squad that did go to the playoffs. And one of the things he said after the game was he basically every day reminds his teammates how special it is for them to be playing at this level and to be making the playoffs.
Part of, you know, me being a leader in here is just always providing perspective, right? And just everything that I've been through and trying to, you know, not necessarily beat it into their heads, but at the same time, just, you know, always being like that voice to let them know, like, yo, this stuff just doesn't happen, right? Games are tough to win in the NFL, and the parity is so good that you might only be here twice in 12 years, right? So take advantage of it. Don't look too far ahead and embrace the moment.
Yeah, and he's really done that. It's great to get his perspective on it. Paul Pazlesny, another Jaguar who's been here for quite some time. This is the first year he's ever been on a winning team in his NFL career. And there are a lot of guys who certainly are, you know, young players who this will feel like what you're supposed to have happen in the NFL. It doesn't always happen.
They might be in for some disappointment later, yeah.
Well, you know, it's going to be tough to keep this group together for multiple years because there's so many good players. It's going to be very costly to keep them all together. But hey, enjoy it right now.
Exactly. Enjoy the ride.
And so two more games remaining in the regular season, both on the road. They go to San Francisco and then to Tennessee. So here's the significance of those last two games. At San Francisco, because the 49ers just beat the Titans, any combination of a Titans loss or a Jaguars win next week clinches the AFC South division for the Jaguars, which would give them a first-round home playoff game. It's going to be very difficult for them to get a first-round bye at this point based on New England beating Pittsburgh last night. But regardless of what happens next week, they'll finish the season against the Titans, and that's a game that could impact seeding, could also impact the AFC Championship game, and I think also will serve as an opportunity for the Jaguars to do something that Malik Jackson told me yesterday he wanted to do, which was to serve notice that the AFC South belongs to the Jaguars.
Nice.
They still want to win the division. They want to be the bully in the room in the division and then see what happens in the postseason.
It must be exciting for you to cover all this. Well, you've been through a lot of losing seasons.
Right. And, you know, again, 96 was my first year covering the Jaguars. And it's remarkable the way that guys interact in the locker room when the team's winning. And particularly for guys who have been around here for a while. Telvin Smith's another one who went through all of the losing years. You can see the joy they have in being in the position that they're in. And there's so much joy. They even caught a shot of Tom Coughlin on the Jumbotron, on the big video board yesterday. And for a split second, he cracked a smile.
Oh, my goodness.
And then noticed
you know
he was on the board.
You know what
face.
Is frozen over. Okay, he's Culpepper, and follow him on Twitter as he follows the Jaguars into their playoff journey. Thanks for being here.
Thanks, Melissa.
That's our show. Thanks for listening. 1A is up next. I'm Melissa Ross, and this is First Coast Connect on 89.9 WJCT-FM Jacksonville, your community, your world. We'll be right back here again at 9 a.m. tomorrow. Have a great day.
Support for First Coast Connect is provided by Baptist Health and the North Florida TPO.